Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Boss Hogg, and co-hosting with me this week is William Miller, the sexiest man ever.
How you doing, Blake Buck?
I'm doing pretty good. Your mouth got kind of close to me when you said that. I'm a little turned on. We've also got Justin Ficarotta of Kill Monty fame.
Oh, wait. I'm here to rock.
Is that is that what we've decided your fame is again?
it's the default fame until Buzzer X fame comes out.
Just Justin Fick of Justin Fick fame.
There we go.
JustinFick@JustinFick.com. And this is your best damn podcast ever for... Oh, wait, I want to say the name. It's Ultimate Fantasy Dragon Chronicles, The Quest for the Crystal Heart Crystal. Episode 10 of the best damn podcast ever, December 5th, 2006. Okay. You know, Jessica, whenever you do dumb stuff, I like copy it and save it for when I need to use it.
He's got a whole reel.
I have a whole reel of like all three of you guys saying dumb stuff. Who knows when it's going to get used?
The special Fick edition.
All right, here we go. All right, this week in the news, we got the tank release date announced. When did that happen? We've had some fairies running around our wiki changing stuff before we do these shows. There is no tank release date at this point. Also, we've got Big Pimpin' in Halo 3. Over 600,000 Wiis have been served, as well as a $4 million Wii promise by this Christmas from Nintendo. Second Life Realtor makes $1 million in real life. Abandonware now legal? Question mark. Scarface deals 1 million copies. Relic is working on a new MMORPG. Echo the Dolphin and Golden X are now available on the Wii Virtual Console. PS2 and PSP sales surge as the PlayStation 3 is nowhere to be found. Big Huge Games is resurrecting Left Behind series. Namco, 500,000 PS3 games required for profit. Sony hits the brake on Gran Turismo HD. Oh, fuck. I did it again. And Sony hits the brakes on Gran Turismo HD. All this and more on this week's best damn podcast ever.
All right, scroll up to the top so I can do my heat.
I'm ready.
Oh, man, I can't see.
Dude, get off me. Don't touch me, you gay boy. Get off me.
Get your butter. All right.
So, according to Bungie.net, the worldwide signups for the Halo 3 beta begin on Monday, December 3rd, 2006. People have been reporting, people that they know at Bungie, have been playing a game called Pimsit C Alpha.
I like
now,
it.
people who are up on the whole Bungie mythology, Pimsit C has been a running April Fool's joke for Bungie for a long time. So it's the speculation is that these people are now in Halo 3 deathmatching or doing whatever.
That's heat.
Beta testing. So, but it's actually Monday, December 4th, because today's the 3rd. Monday, December 4th, at 12:01, you can sign up at the Halo 3 website.
That'll probably be before I finish editing this show.
So how many people are they accepting to the beta program?
I am not sure.
I would imagine.
Everybody?
Something about you have to qualify, so I'm guessing you have to be under 13.
You have to be mean.
All right, so if you're into Halo 3 and you're ready to play it now, go sign up on Monday. Or I guess back in the future or in the past when that happened.
Sign up now.
Sign up now, exactly.
All right, over 600,000 Wiis served. Nintendo recaps its new system's first 8 days at retail, says more than 75% of Wii owners also picked up Zelda.
Shocker.
What a big surprise.
I thought it was going to be Excite Truck to take it, but apparently not.
While Sony says it would have 400,000 PlayStation 3 systems ready for its North American launch, Nintendo consistently refused to put a comparable figure on its own efforts with the Wii launch. Instead, it would say only that it would ship 4 million systems worldwide by the end of the year. Wow, that's a lot of...
That's a big claim.
That's a big claim.
In fact, let me just roll into this next article here. Reggie still stands, even this was later in the week, he still stands behind their 4 million... number unit shipment for the end of the year. So it sounds like they're really trying to push all 4 million of those out to stores by this Christmas. So
if you're the type that likes to track this kind of stuff, go to nextgenwars.com, nexgenwars.com. And it has it looks like pretty accurate numbers of what's been sold in each system so far, and then you can vote on which console will win. But basically, so far, it has each of the three consoles. Xbox 360 has sold close to 8 million in a year. The Wii has sold about 1.2 million, and the PlayStation 3 is at about 350,000.
The Wii has sold 1.2 million?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Already? So fast,
it's launched in Japan too. They sold out
there. That's true.
Their 400,000 in like, I don't know, 30 seconds.
Reggie says here all systems are go for reaching the 4 million target we have in our financials by December 31st. If you build it, they will come. Mantra is what he stands by. We will sell everything we make, so it's now simply manufacturing the thing. So it sounds like they're ready to grab some balls around at Nintendo.
Boastful words. Well, we'll see how
I saw a figure that the Wii was selling about 78,000 Wiis consoles per day. So Second Life Realtor makes $1 million. Aylin Grafe, who is better known by the name Anchi Chung, works as a real estate developer. She buys property, develops it, resells it, and uses the profits to buy even more. Her business has blah, 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 blah. Second Life. So we've actually reported on this chick before. Back in the olden days.
I remember. And now, so I guess now she's been the first player to make $1 million off of all her assets.
So she started with an initial investment of, get this, $10, and developed her fortune over 32 months. She worked along the same principles as real estate developers do. She began by buying small amounts of virtual real estate, and then she subdivided and developed with landscaping and themed architectural rebuilds. And then she then resold or rented the property out for a profit.
So here's my question. Does she pay income tax on that money that she made?
I think there's some debate about that.
Yeah, there's a big debate as to whether, like, how and if the federal government should tax income made online. I think they will eventually. It's just a matter of, like, figuring out how to do it. So I wonder if she got that cool $1 million without the government's hands in it. Is she working out of China?
She's born in China, but she's a German citizen.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, but her name is... Well, I'm just saying her, like, avatar name is Chinese.
Yeah, no, but I read the part where it says she's born in China.
Wait, I didn't read.
She's born in China, she's a German citizen, and she has an office in China.
Okay.
All right.
And they have 25 employees expanding to 50.
Really? So she's got her own little company now. It's not just her doing this.
So I'm convinced you, the three of us, the best damn podcast ever, we need to get into business in Second Life.
You know what? That's going to go in the same drawer Tank is in right now.
Look, it's going to be Blake Buck's lovemaking service, all right?
Hang on.
It's going to be the BDP Fox Penis Emporium.
All right, Abandonware is now legal. Changes in copyright rules let gamers break copy protection in old games in some circumstances. Some gamers... Dude, get that back in your ear. This is nothing but tears, Blake Buck, so close to me. Some gamers have been arguing for years that Abandonware, older games that are no longer supported by the original copyright holders, should be exempt from copy protection laws. These retro gamers believe that since the software is no longer being sold, blah, 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 blah. So the point of this point of view may be now validated, as the Librarian of Congress, James H. Billington, that's quite a name.
Wow, he sounds crunk already.
I was reading this to William earlier, and I said Biggleton.
Biggleton. So James H. Biggleton approved six exemptions to the 1998 Digital Millennium Copyright Act in the U.S. Billington ruled that for games for machines that are no longer available, the copy protection controls may be bypassed for, quote, archival purposes.
That's like medicinal purposes.
That's kind of vague. Is it just referring to copy protection schemes, or is it talking about the games as, you know, themselves, as copyrighted entities themselves?
It seems that the wording suggests only the copy protection. So if you already own the game, and I guess you lost the manual because you're dumb, and you have to look up, you know, the code on page 5 to play the game, I guess you can hack SOAR if you need to.
Oh, that's good. I was worried the cops were going to come in. Freeze!
Put X-Wing down. You did not pay for it.
I was going to be a winner.
I was thinking about selling those little code wheels they ship with Monkey Island on the black market.
Oh, dude, I remember those.
The code wheels.
Yeah, you remember, like...
Dude, you had to, like, create the pirate's face and then look up a place on the middle of the wheel, and it gives you a year. Then, you have to plug it into Monkey Island just so you could play it.
Dude, that's pretty fun.
Analog copy protection.
Blake Buck would have fun with that.
You'd break it and couldn't play a game.
Oh.
So this is interesting. I'm all for, like archiving old games in new... not in their original formats, like ROMs and, you know, all that stuff. So this is... Are you scooting your... Blake Buck is scooting his butt further up on my leg.
Look, I gotta move in. I'm about to do this next article.
Go.
All right. Scarface deals 1 million copies. So Sierra published and some jank developer nobody cares about developed. Scarface has sold 1 million copies in 1 month, becoming the number one game on every console that it was released on and the number one game for the month of October. So, just goes to show you that good games never win.
Yeah, in other news, 1 million gamers are retards.
So it didn't get a lot of critical acclaim. We bashed it a lot on the show. But, you know, it's essentially, this is how the game industry works. You get a strong intellectual property, you spend $1 billion on marketing and advertising, and then guess what, baby? The money rolls in.
So Blake Buck, explain to me how this game works. Doesn't old Scarface die in the end of the first movie or the only movie?
That's what I heard. That's what I'm pretty sure he died, but apparently that doesn't count anymore because we had to make this game.
The movie is no longer canon.
So so if you guys are buying Scarface, shame on you. Shame on you. Go buy something good. Go buy, I don't know, what's a good like original title that came out in the same month?
Chocolate and peanut butter, baby.
No, go buy Bully. There's a good original title that, you know, apparently nobody picked up.
So, job listings have revealed that Relic is working on a new RPG and massive multiplayer online game.
Ooh.
So, basically, they had job listings that were looking for, quote, an experienced and motivated senior designer to contribute to Relic's new RPG project.
Hmm.
Now, let me comment on this by saying that if you have a new project and you need a senior designer, what that tells me is like, hey, guys, we're going to make an RPG. That's what we got so far. We need help. So applicants should have 4+ years of game design experience and a record of successfully published titles. So if any of our listeners fall into that category, you might want to jump on this.
And then come on our show.
Yeah. All right, so this is probably the most important news we'll ever hear this month. Echo and Golden Axe.
Golden Axe!
Now available on the Wii Virtual Console. What were you trying to get me to do?
I'm trying to get you to say Golden Axe again, and then I was going to say, look, let's, like, Golden Axe!
Golden Axe!
Golden Axe!
Golden Axe! All right, we win.
We won.
All right, so Nintendo promised that it would add to the roster of Virtual Console titles for the Wii every Monday and deliver on that promise this week with Superstar Soldier. Now it appears that the Virtual Console releases aren't relegated to just one per week. Two more titles have been made available on the Virtual Console as Sega released its Genesis games, Golden Axe and Echo the Dolphin, on the service.
All right, I want to read this part. Golden Axe is a two-player fantasy action game that pits players against the evil Death Adder as a fighter, an Amazon, or a dwarf. Oh, God, I lost my place now. Don't interrupt the flow, William Miller. When the game was released in 1989, one of its hooks was the option that it... Blah, 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 blah. All right, so Golden Axe, good stuff. You got a Wii, go check it out. Echo the Dolphin, it's all right.
All right, both games sell on the Wii for 800 points. That's about $8, and the games are rated E for everyone. The pair is playable with the Wiimote and the classic controller or a GameCube controller.
But if you plug in the GameCube controller, it's going to make your console look ugly. It's going to have all the wire nipples hanging out the top of it.
And it's purple.
All right, proposition.
Go.
This is from the... I got this idea from the beginning of the year. Okay, our lag test, instead of saying 1, 2, 3, we say Golden Axe, Golden Axe, Golden Axe.
Golden Axe!
Golden Axe!
Golden Axe!
I was about to say it myself.
All right, so the PS2 and PSPs have huge sales, baby, this weekend. This entire week, as the PlayStation 3 has become pretty much unavailable on every outlet. It turns out that mom and pop are now buying their kids PlayStation 2s and PSPs. So the PS2 and PSPs have had a huge surge in sales. Carricker says that the PlayStation 2 sales rose up 106.
Oh, my God. Dude, I'm taking this article.
No!
Why do we even post articles in the week? We can just push headlines and just run with it.
So, Carricker says that the PlayStation 2 sales rose 116% during the week of November 26th compared to the week prior. The PSP fared even better, enjoying a week-over-week increase of 260%. Damn!
Now, you know there's going to be a kid out there who got a PlayStation 2 two Christmases in a row. I hate to be that kid.
Oh. Yeah, did you guys see the PS3 on eBay, which was a PS2 and a PS1 taped together?
Oh, yeah, I saw that. No, and it also had Gran Turismo 5, which was Gran Turismo 2 and 3 together. Oh. Oh, hats off to you, sir.
So the PSP increasing sales by 280.5%, does that mean that they sold one PSP last week and three this week?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, so Big Huge Games is resurrecting Left Behind. Rise of Nations developer licenses technology to developer of religious real-time strategy game for a sequel. And I love how every one of the articles that I'm reading has, like, about three paragraphs of lead-in to anything that's even remotely relevant to the article. All right, so while Left Behind Eternal Forces, the first interactive adaptation of the apocalyptic Left Behind Christian fiction series, was crucified by reviewers upon its release earlier this month, publisher Left Behind Games has announced a sequel to its real-time strategy game. They're not going it alone this time. The publisher has signed a multi-year technology license agreement with developer Big Huge Games.
Oh, no.
Which has no shortage of experience in the real-time strategy genre.
No. Oh, we've got a dying project, and we just attached a big name to it in hopes that's going to save the project. No, see, it's just going to kill your big name.
All right, so these guys are falling into the same trap that those developers did when they thought they'd make games for girls. All right? So
wait a minute, what about Brenda Barathwaite?
Okay, well, hang on, I'm getting there. So they say, oh, man, so like 80% of America, right? They're Christian, right?
And then 50% of women are girls.
so we can make the same game we've been making and just put a Christian skin on it, and that'll make them happy, right? Wrong. You've got a bunch of Christian groups like up in arms about the first game, not because it sucks, which it does, but because it's like extremely violent and not in any way related to Christian values or whatever. So like the Christian community hates this thing, and it's a terrible game. They ripped on it on The Daily Show. You can find that thing on YouTube. It's pretty funny. They showed like a picture of a Grand Theft Auto, and then they had a picture of this game. So apparently you're rewarded for saving people instead of killing them. Killing somebody gets you -1 point, and saving them gets you +2 points. A difference of 3 points.
So you could say, William Miller, that Left Behind is effectively being left behind.
Well, I suppose you could.
Hey, brilliant. But I wonder, is Namco gonna be left behind?
Not if they don't sell 500,000 copies of their PS3 games, William Miller, go.
All right, Namco, 500,000 PS3 games required for profit. Blake Bug looked me straight in the eye, trying to get me to read that article. And I just thought, God, Blake Bug, you made a dumb joke. Man, that's gonna fall on his head. No, that was a segue I missed. Not on my game today. All right. All right, titles for Sony's next generation console have to shift 500,000 copies before developers start to make money.
That's a lot of copies.
That's a lot of copies. So the software available for any console is crucial to its success, according to the report on the Bloomberg News Service. Bloomberg News Service. Developers may be thinking carefully about making games for PlayStation 3 because the number of sales required to put the project's in the black. Namco, Bandai Holdings Inc., President Mr. Sulu, said in an interview that PS3 games must be a mass market success. Games for the next gen console cost an average of $8.6 million to create, and they need to sell 500,000 units before the developers can turn a profit. And how many
which is funny because there's only about 360.
Yeah. I was just about to ask.
PS3s out there.
So unless you buy two copies of the game because it's so good, it's not gonna work for you.
Well, see, this is we gotta start talking about the next generation because it's now, baby. All right, next generation is here,
dude. No more Gears of War for you. I think you've had enough.
But if you talk about like the next generation titles, they're going to have, you know, all the the cost of the games are going up and up and up through the roof as the graphics get better, the production values go up. Are we going to see a rift in the market where we see the huge big budget titles and then, you know, like with the Wii, we'll see smaller budget titles aimed at a more localized crowd?
Well, see, the Wii did it right. Like, the Wii didn't have to subsidize any of its like money, right? So the PlayStation 3, like, their console probably costs over $1,000, but they're footing the bill for about half of that. The Wii isn't doing that. They're making money the day the thing comes out because, you know, they didn't have to have all the extra development costs for the software.
That's not Namco. That's like, if because Sony's selling at a loss, that's not why they have to sell so many units.
Well, that has to do with it, though.
No, it doesn't.
Are you sure? Well, okay. Look, well, explain it to me, Blake Buck.
Sony loses the money because they want to get, essentially, they charge them fees to license the game.
Right.
So, well, maybe in part.
Yeah.
But I think it's largely just the increased cost of producing big budget titles.
I think, well, okay. It works the same way for Microsoft. The console developer makes its money from the fees that it gets from the software developer.
Right.
Right.
Licensing fees.
Licensing fees, right. So the more money they have to make a profit, the higher those licensing fees are going to get.
That's assuming that their licensing fees are extra heavy because of the huge loss they're selling it at, which I don't know if that's true.
Which I would assume it's true.
I wouldn't.
Well, anyway, it's bad news for Sony and bad news for Sony developers. So developers thinking twice about actually making games for this console.
Well, I mean, between that and then, you know, Sony's been sort of lagging behind on renewing all their deals with, you know, like Rockstar for Grand Theft Auto 4, Assassin's Creed. You know, they're losing a lot of their killer games.
It's true. In fact,
no, this is not my article.
In fact, they've even lost another high profile game with Gran Turismo HD being canceled. So is this my article?
It's
I'm taking
article,
it. All right, so just this week, guys, Sony hits the brakes on Gran Turismo HD. Polyphony Digital's PlayStation 3 driving sim will now only be released in a downloadable free demo in Japan, and the U.S. fate of the game is still unknown. So instead of coming out, it's not coming out. There's going to be a free demo, and that's about it. Maybe there'll be a micropayment structure down the road to get more content, but it sounded like pretty much canceled Gran Turismo HD.
So the guy at the helm, Yamauchi, is taking the series in a completely different direction, saying it will be a fully realized online car life simulation.
That reminds me of, like, what is it, Test Drive Unlimited. That game was cool because, like, okay, you're on, like, this beach island, like, in Hawaii. And I love it because it's like, oh, I'm in Hawaii. I drive a fast car. Yeah. I want to have a black friend with a helicopter. But you would drive around this island, and it was a huge island, and you could, like, get in races. But then, like, other players were brought in online, like, real time. And you could just go up to somebody else driving around and honk at them, and you could race. So maybe that's the direction they're trying to take Gran Turismo in, like, a more like a MMO kind of direction.
All right, so I have an anecdote. So we're going to get into this a little later. But Blake Buck and William Miller had to make a late-night trip to Walmart last night. This is about 1:30 at night, so... So I leave the house before Blake Buck, right? And I'm on the highway, and I see this car coming up behind me. Like, you know, there's no cars on the road, so I just assume it's Blake Buck. And I have to race, right? So I get going, you know, I'm cruising at 65, and then I get up to 80, 85. This guy's still on my tail. He's trying to pass me, and he finally does, and it's not Blake Buck. But at this point, you know, I'm already racing. You know, I might as well keep going, right? So I race him all the way to Walmart. And that's my story.
Did you win?
I won.
Oh, that's good.
I don't know what it is about Walmart, though, at 1:30 in the morning, but they must hire, like, an entire force of retards and just all schedule them for the graveyard shift. Like, I've made late night Walmart runs before, too, and it's like walking into a special ed class on Ritalin.
Bad just fix.
And with that, oh Jesus, it's time for releases. All right, guys, this week in releases, we got a bunch of games, including one you may not have missed, or wait a minute, you may not have seen, Sketch Fighter 4000 Alpha for the Mac. It's available now, so this is Ambrosia's long-awaited title. Me and Wayne Miller played it earlier today. Do we want to do a review here?
Or? I guess we could do a review here. So Sketch Fighter Alpha is probably the first game BDPE has ever reported on. And and it's a real awesome game. It's one of those games that, as a game developer, you think like, why didn't I make this game 10 years ago and make $1 jillion off of it? Now, since it's a Mac game, it won't be that successful. But Sketch Fighter 4000 Alpha really, it has great gameplay, and it's like a it's one big level. It's kind of like,
I don't know if it was one big level. I think the levels were large, but there were still interlocking parts.
But it's got lots of guns, and the graphics are cool, and it's just a neat retro space plane game.
It's pretty cool.
So Ambrosia has redeemed themselves.
I think so. I think they've
Redline.
They're back at zero right now.
Yeah, they net zero until they either decide to make Redline 2 or Sketch Fighter 2, whichever the choice is yours.
All right. So also this week in the real game releases, we've got Far Cry Vengeance for the Wii. That's coming out on December 5th. We've also got Metal Gear Solid Portable Ops for the PlayStation Portable. This is going to be a big one, guys. It's coming out on the 5th. Set 6 years after Snake Eater, Portable Ops Chronicles Big Boss's departure from... Ooh, gotta take a breath. Big Boss's departure from Fox Unit and eventually founding of Foxhound. So this is... And like Acid or that, like, I don't know, some sort of, like, graphical novel PlayStation Portable game, this is a tried and true, honest to God, Metal Gear game on the PlayStation Portable.
Thank God. It's about time. I think the PlayStation Portable would have sold, like, twice the number of units had this game been a launch title.
I think so. But, so, that's definitely going to be cool. So, check it out this week.
All right, we got Kirby Squeak Squad for the DS coming out on December 6th.
Dude, that sounds so pornographic and wrong.
So, Kirby returns to the DS. Don't get close to people. Kirby returns to the DS in classical platformer form with extra features such as stylus control over Kirby's copy abilities. WWE SmackDown versus Raw 2007 on the PSP December 5th. Get ready for another dose of WWE action with SmackDown versus Raw 2007. The next installment of THQ's popular wrestling series. The game offers a number of new features and improvements. Blah, 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 blah. All right. And Star Wars Lethal Alliance for PSP. December 5th. Star Wars Lethal Alliance is built exclusively for the PSP system and the DS. Immerses players in an adventure that takes place between Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, and Episode 4, A New Hope.
Sounds dumb. That's all I know about that game, is that description. Sounds dumb. But maybe it's cool.
All right. So, we also have Star Trek Legacy for the PC and Xbox 360. Star Trek Legacy is a next-gen game that spans the eras of all Star Trek television shows. Lame.
Make it so.
All right, we also have Castlevania Portrait of Ruin coming out for the DS on the 5th. Castlevania Portrait of Ruin lets players switch freely between Jonathan and Charlotte as they proceed on their mission, each with their own strengths, abilities, and style of play. You don't even need to read the description. Castlevania game, new. Go buy it now.
Yeah, pretty much. New Castlevania game on the DS. Those have always...
Automatic purchase.
Automatic purchase.
We also have Full Auto 2 Battle Lines for the PS3 on the 7th. Sega is bringing the sequel to the Xbox 360's trigger-happy racing game to the PlayStation 3.
Justin Vick, have you ever played Full Auto 1?
Negative.
Well, I tried out the demo the other day on Xbox Live downloads. By the way, demo downloads on Xbox Live, awesome. Awesome. I don't know who thought up that idea. Awesome. I think every game should have a demo. Like... From now until the end of time. So I played Full Auto. It was pretty cool. You drove around, you blew stuff up. It was real fast paced. Lots of noise, lots of flashing colors. Blake Book liked it. So it's only about $20 on the Xbox 360. So when I get a little more change, I might go pick that one up.
No, this is me. Fight Night round 3.
No, wait, this is me. Shut up. All right, so we got Fight Night. So we got Fight Night round 3 for the PS3. Didn't Brenda Brathwaite work on this game?
I think she either worked on it or worked on,
she worked on the original.
Yeah, and I have to say, she talks a lot of smack about this game, and, Nick, my buddy, beat her ass in this game in class one day. So,
oh, that's terrible.
It's terrible.
Because women can't box.
I know.
Need to go get some Wheeze for that. All right. that was like a double meaning. All right. Brothers in Arms D-Day on the PSP. Now, I saw this game, and it looked, you know, my immediate reaction was just blows, but it looked like it might have some potential. It looked like an honest-to-God, fairly good first-person shooter on the PSP. So maybe it'll pull it out. Description here says Brothers in Arms is a D-Day-themed World War II-based action squad, blah, 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 PSP. Oh, I got one more. We've also got Rayman Raving Rabbits for the PlayStation 2, so this is the fourth installment in the Rayman series, where you gotta help Rayman save the world from furry foes by busting out his best moves. So this is a Wii game. I don't really know how that's gonna translate to to PlayStation 2, but I'm sure they'll find a way.
Other Wii games this month, Ant Bully for the Wii, December 5th. Based on Warner Brothers Pictures' upcoming digital animated family adventure, The Ant Bully. Have you seen a trailer for that game or for that movie?
Mm-mm.
It looks absolutely retarded. All right, moving on. Zatch Bell. Is that how you say that? Mambo Fury. Zatch Bell Mambo Fury's fighting game based on the popular anime and manga series. We'll be skipping that one. I say it's to Meltdown for the Wii. The game equals fail.
Who wrote that in there?
That's our fairy again.
That's my official application for the job of GameSpot description writer.
This game equals fail.
And finally, Barnyard for the Wii, based on Nintendo's animated film of the same name. All right, moving
Nickelodeon's
on.
Nintendo doesn't have animated films. All right, guys.
If they did.
Now it's time for everybody's favorite section, the judgment. All right, now, guys, I got to tell a story about what happened with our judgment this week. So we weren't sure what we were going to do for the judgment this week. We were like, well, we're going to do RPG show, so I don't know. Maybe we'll pick an RPG. And then, so we come in our wiki today, and apparently someone has found our wiki and has been putting little messages to us in it. So sitting right there in the spot for the judgment, it says we should do a judgment on the new IMG podcast. And already in there it says thumbs down for us. We didn't even have to decide it.
So, Blake Buck, I understand you've grabbed some clips from the latest IMG podcast. That's right.
I do have some clips from the late IMG podcast. So you guys remember... No laughing now. So on last week's show, guys, if you listen past the end of the show, after 15 seconds of silence, you heard us ragging on the Inside podcast, also known as the BuzzRex podcast. And in particular, one of the hosts on the show. So this is the last time we're going to be mentioned in this show, on our show. But we figure we should respond to what they said. So here's what they said about us.
Okay, the point is, if you listen to the last 2.5 minutes, they say some derogatory stuff, bleep out some stuff. And the point is, well, first of all, Justin Figueroa's last name means in German. And
no, it doesn't.
Thank you, Jan Shan from the Horns, for that little piece of gold. So anyway,
Fick in German means sexual intercourse. That's it. It doesn't mean you
okay,
idiot.
The point is, and we were
right, so that's all we had of that. So that, I mean, for all the smack, was talking in the forums. That's pretty much all he retaliated with. So
that is the podcast wars that was posted that one,
that's the wars.
In 36-point font in both forums.
So now you guys might have noticed. It seems like Stefan was a little bit angry at Mike there. I mean, they seem to be a little dismissive of Mike. So we found another clip at the show right at the end. So this is when they're doing their outro.
Dude, I took my cube case and I turned it into a fishbowl. Just there's no fish in there.
That's because you're mean.
That's like a $1,200 box of water.
No, because our old computer lab consisted of cubes, and so the system admin let me have one as a graduation present, and it turned into a fish.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I'm sure he loved you dearly.
That's disgusting.
Well, I think that's about it for this week. We'd like to thank everyone for listening. Once again, send us comments, suggestions if you have any questions also. So, Stefan, good to have you on the show, as always.
Yes, it was good to be on the show.
Glad to hear your comments.
Yes, thank you for letting me being on the show, even though I'm a host.
And like I said earlier, we're going to have Frost on the show next week, so you can look forward to hearing from him and his illustrious voice.
Okay, enough of that.
All right, well, I think
You know what's funny? Is that as much as we don't like on this show, his show likes him even less.
This has been a real bad week for me.
I seem to recall in episodes 1 and 2, was hosting, but now it seems that Black Shock, a.k.a. Jared Nettles, seems to be the host of the show. What happened there, buddy?
Well, okay, so the best damn podcast ever is, you know, I'd say ambivalent about the as we are about the Mac gaming industry. We're sort of ambivalent about the podcast. But I mean,
what's that word mean?
It means we don't care. Okay. But if the host of the show, Jared or Stefan, want to come on our show anytime, you're more than welcome to. In all seriousness, we could work out some little Mac section,
or the Mac Minute, perhaps?
Mac Minute every month.
So Jared and Stefan, pause. If the two of you would ever like to come on the show, just send us an email at feedback@bestdamnpodcastever.com.
Now
that's it. We're done.
That's it. We're no. Oh wait, Justin, go ahead and say.
Well, I got a quick thing. Like I remember listening to their first episode, not the pilot, episode one, and they had a guest on there that was really good. And it's just like they could be like an awesome show if they take that guy and replace with him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they have a lot of. I mean, they're like what we were when we started. I mean, we weren't quite the sexy men, smooth operators that we are now, but.
Too smooth, Blake Buck. Too smooth.
Too smooth. But they have potential. I think they have potential.
Kick to the curb. Go, D.
We're done with our little war here. Okay.
It's over.
It's over. So, again, the invitation's still out, Stefan and Jared. So, we'll be waiting to hear from you. All right. What do we got next? Do we have an actual real judgment this week?
No, that was it. All right. Okay. Next is the jank. I think we have another little gift from our wiki fairy. The first jank on here is an Apple IIc.
Apple II forever.
For $150, that's 37.5 sneak kings. The principle of modern computing, the Apple IIc, is the most powerful computer on the market today. Get yours off
Did
eBay.
Did you say pinnacle?
Did I say pinnacle?
Pinnacle.
Did I not say pinnacle?
Anyway, I said penicil.
I can't read. Penicillin. The pinnacle of modern computing, Apple II, is the most powerful computer on the market today. Get yours off eBay for the equivalent of 37.5 sneak kings. Be the envy of all your friends.
So, if you want an Apple II, I don't have the clip queued up, but if you want an Apple II, Apple II computer,
dude, you gotta play it.
I might add it in later. Check it out on eBay. Also, guys, this week I've got a fairly substantial jank. You can get not one, but two free Xbox Live Arcade games on just by filling out some simple forms. Are you saying that like I was talking too fast, or that's you being excited?
That's me being excited.
Oh, okay.
The excitement is gone now.
Okay.
You ruined the mood.
So you can fill out a form, sign away your soul, get free Xbox Live Arcade games. So the link for this, for you guys who aren't going to look in the album art because you're too lazy, it's xbox360nextgennow.com/register. By the way, guys, all the links to the jank of the week, they're always in the album or the show notes. So regardless if you got a color iPod or not, you can always get show notes. When you go through the submission process, you just use the code XBXNG104. But there's also a rumor that if you use XBXNG102, you get four free games.
You got the code here.
But I don't know if that's real or not. I did the one for two, and it worked. Well, I hadn't gotten them yet, but they sent it to you like at Christmas, I think.
So what games did you get, Blake Buck?
Did you hear the statement I just said before?
No.
I said they're going to send them to you at Christmas. What games did you get, Blake Buck? I don't know. We'll see. Probably not Small Arms. I see that game, and it's like I want to like it, but then I can't, you know? Hmm.
Well, it's such a good idea, but they just
yeah, it's something about it. I don't really know why I don't like it. It just didn't do it for me. Anyway, so
I think it's something about in the second level, just standing in one place while the computer players both jump down pits and die. just took away the fun factor for me.
Probably so. All right, so now it's time for this discussion. All right, guys, so what's this week's discussion?
All right, this week's discussion is RPGs. That would be role-playing games.
My goodness.
It's about time we talked about these.
I don't know about role-playing games, William. There's so many of them. So many different kinds. How can I get a foothold into the role-playing game industry?
Well, it's a good place to start at the beginning, Blake Buck, with Gary Gygax, the I guess the creator of the modern RPG with Dungeons and Dragons.
I am so glad I'm not part of the script.
Oh yeah, of course not. His company TSR Tactical Studies Rules came up with this system. Him and another guy, but we never remember his name because it's not cool like Gygax.
No, it's like a you know, what's that? Ralph Baer. Nobody knows his name.
Dave Arneson, that's the guy. Anyway, so this guy coined the term HP. I mean, come on. Come on.
That sounds like father to me.
Father to me. Absolutely. So then we move on to the greatest RPGs of all time, Go Blake Buck.
Greatest RPGs of all time. Dude, you can't segue to that. We gotta let it simmer, baby. We gotta let the simmer. Ow!
That was negative reinforcement.
You just beat the earphone into my head.
Well, first,
before we do this, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but let's talk about the different kinds of role-playing games, at least that are around today. So I would say the two big tiers of role-playing games are Eastern, essentially, and Western, Japanese and American role-playing games. So, Justin Vick, what would you say are some of the key characteristics of Japanese role-playing games?
Gay weeaboo.
I was going to say turn-based, but I suppose it works as well.
Well, generally your average Japanese-influenced or Japanese role-playing game has a very heavy-handed story, often androgynous, effeminate-looking characters.
Generally a fascination with technology, abused power, crystals.
Yeah, and your protagonist is a whiny bitch, usually.
I think you need to have the requisite technology versus religion conflict. Fire and ice, dungeon, go.
And so what about American RPGs? I would say some characteristics are generally more action-oriented. They try and, instead of turn-based, they like you hitting lots of buttons. Case in point,
the box art on Western RPGs always has to have some elf with blue skin and big teeth.
They generally focus more on, like, I would say more active playing. They're more about, like Diablo, for instance. You got to click a whole lot, click, clickety-clack. There's no turn-based elements in Diablo. You're clicking all the time. Another one would be Morrowind or Oblivion. Again, these are games that are generally more active, but their stories generally aren't as good or, you know, involved or complex as a Japanese role-playing game.
Well, to me, it seems like the Japanese games are centered around the story, and then the Western RPGs are more centered around,
like, the progression.
You know, like character building, right. Stat building, grinding for 5 hours to find one stupid little gem.
Like, role-playing, really, I mean, is just a way of describing a way of progressing a character through a game. Like, people always say, oh, well, it's about elves and stuff, which is a common trait, but, you know, it's really just a way of progressing a player through a game. Even Mario could be... Well, I guess there is a Mario RPG, now that I think about it, you know?
Well, I think that the RPG is the first real vehicle for narrative that was ever introduced into the gaming industry. Like, you've got some narrative in your beat-em-ups and some narrative in your platformers, but the RPG was the first one to really focus on story, so...
With adventure.
With adventure, right.
And then, you know, and then let's not forget, you're talking about your pencil and paper RPGs, where really
Absolutely. It's,
you know, like five or six sweaty nerds getting together in one room and just sort of writing their own story.
Oh, I'm there.
That's called William Miller's Playtime Sunday night.
Also, you have to remember that in the beginning, computerized RPGs were very similar to the pen and paper ones. In fact...
And like, MUDs, right? What are the
multi-user
dungeons?
The first ones you had were text-based, and then you had some sort of semi-graphical ones where you actually had to, like, keep a map. You know, like the first Ultima or, any of those real early role-playing games, you had to keep a map yourself on graph paper. You'd get lost and die. You had to write down what everybody said, and it was very much like an involved process, just like the traditional pen and paper ones.
Well, I remember way back in the day on my Commodore 64... SSI, Strategical Simulations Inc., had a whole series of, you know, D&D games based on the pen and paper rules. And I remember when I got that game when I was a kid, it came with this massive book. And just, like, in this book were all, like, things you would overhear in a bar. And when you go and play the game, you go into the bar and you go listen to Tale, and it goes, you hear Tale 205. And you have to go look it up in the book and read it.
Wow.
I remember some of those games. They were the same people that made like Hills Far and I remember one game I got. This is the first game I ever installed myself. That was a big accomplishment back on DOS.
First game I ever saw was Doom.
Doom. So this game was like a combination top-down and side-scrolling game, and I remember it was absolutely impossible to beat. Absolutely impossible. It was one of those D&D SSI things.
Hmm. So what are some of your
guys... Are you talking about Heroes of the Lance?
Yes, that's it. That's the game. I still have
the only reason I remember that is because I see it ridiculed on every gaming site I've been to.
No, it was awful. Hillsfar was good, though.
So what are some of you guys' favorite RPGs for each type? Let's talk about, like, we're not picking our favorites right now, but what are some good examples of Japanese role-playing? Final Fantasy, right? What else?
Well, that's about it.
No, but then you've got, like, Dragon Quest.
Yeah, Dragon Quest.
Benten Kaitos is apparently... big series.
Blake, Buck, you play that game all the time.
You're right. I've got all of them. Benten Kaitos, Red through Blue.
That's two games.
Oh, actually, well, Pokemon is actually a rather Japanese role-playing game. Oh, what? Come on, somebody help me out here. What are some other ones?
You've got the Star Ocean series. I played some of that.
Oh, yeah, the Phantasy Star series.
Yep.
Lest you forget the Chrono Trigger series, Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross, which ran the story into the ground like a plane.
You have Secret of Mana and Secret of Evermore.
Yeah. Boy, those were good. That was like a fusion. Fusion?
That has some synergy in there? Oh,
synergy,
whoa!
Guys, synergy.
It's so fast.
So,
it's like Aperture.
was like a quadruple callback
callbacks to things that only we remember. Nobody remembers this stuff. So, all right. So, what about American RPGs? What are some good examples of American RPGs? I think we have to say it here, guys.
Diablo.
No, you missed it. Two.
Golden Axe.
So Diablo's a good one. Morrowind, Oblivion are both good examples.
Ultima.
It's not for Ultima. What is that? Gauntlet. What are some other good examples? Knights of the Old Republic, Jade Empire.
So enough wankery. Rank them. Top three. Go.
All right, Justin Vic, sounds like you've already got yours sorted out. What are they?
All right. Well, my top three, I would have to say, my number one is a tie between Final Fantasy VI and Chrono Trigger.
Hmm. All right.
I have to get the obvious ones out of the way first. Number two, I would have to give that to Diablo II. I've never had so much fun clicking on my screen in one spot for 3 hours straight in a long time. Not since those hentai find the hotspot games that Blake Buck was talking about.
I like the hotspot games.
Hotspots. And then number three, I'm gonna go off the path a little bit. Number three, I'm going to say Dark Cloud 2.
Dark Cloud 2. Huh. Now, Justin Fick, I would not put Dark Cloud 2 to be in your top three.
Why not?
Well, it's Japanese, cartoony, and it's probably rated E for everyone.
Well, actually, it is pretty tame. Like, there's no blood and guts spilling. There's really not a whole lot of story going on in there. But it's just one of those. It's more like kind of a throwback to like old school dungeon crawling. You know, the dungeons are randomized, the treasures randomized, though the monsters. It's just one of those things where it doesn't feel like you're being ushered down. You know, just like all the dungeons are one big long tunnel. Final Fantasy X2. And it's
that was Crash Bandicoot RPG. That was Rail RPG. That one.
So I don't know. It was a breath of fresh air for me.
All right. So Justin Vick, what's your least favorite RPG of all time?
Kingdom Hearts.
Oh man, I should have said that one. Oh damn.
Blam.
Oh man, you snaked it from me.
It's over.
You
still got Kingdom Hearts 2.
So I remember. Me and my girlfriend used to play Kingdom Hearts 2, and we're like, oh, we're going to beat this game. We at the second to the last level. You know, even though we've hated the whole game, we're going to beat it. We're so close. And then, like, the second to the last world was impossible, and then I threw the game on the ground and stomped it. I'm done with that.
Now I got an anecdote, Kingdom Hearts. Took me a second to really recall the gory details of this anecdote. But I played Kingdom Hearts for exactly 5 minutes. Now, I have a buddy, a game design buddy here in Vegas, and he keeps telling me about Kingdom Hearts. Every time I'm hanging out with him, he's like, "Oh, Kingdom Hearts is so awesome." I'm like, "No, it sucks. It's gay. It's got Disney characters. I don't want to play it. Like, the main character looks like a little girl. I don't want to play it." It's like, but he's like, "No, just give it a shot. You will love it. I'm gonna let you borrow it." So I'm like, "Okay." And he's like, "Well, let's trade borrowing games." So he lets me borrow Kingdom Hearts, and he borrows Contra Shattered Soldier from me.
Uh oh, I think I see where this is going. Too late.
So I'm sitting down. I'm starting to play Kingdom Hearts, and it's like, you know what? Okay, I'll suffer through this retarded tutorial, and it's like, I'm trying to like ignore the fact that my main character looks like a pansy, and the first thing that happens is I'm on this fantasy island and they want me to go run around and collect logs. Power off, game over, and I don't get to trade back for like 3 months. So this is sitting on my freaking shelf, gathering dust, while this douchebag is off enjoying Contra Shattered Soldier. I felt so gypped by playing this game. So it's like my testicles shriveled up, and they're like, "No, dude, what are you doing? Shut it off."
No, Silas!
No!
I like how we both just pantomimed your testicles. All right. So, William Miller, your top three.
All right. Well,
I'm not going to do top three. I'm going to do three because, like, I like all the ones you guys like. So yeah. I'm going to say three ones that haven't been said.
All right. Well. Yeah, my top, the number three and number two are like, I don't know, toss up between Final Fantasy VI, VII, Diablo II, whatever. Well, my favorite one, though, my favorite RPG of all time is Ultima 6 for DOS.
Ultima 6?
Yeah, I just recently played through that game again. This is the first game William Miller's played in about 3 years, except for Gears of War. And
Now, I started playing Ultima at 3. And I stopped playing Ultima at 3. So why don't you give me a rundown of what exactly Ultima 6 is?
All right, well, Ultima 6, right, you're pulled into the land of Lord British again. This is the sixth time this has happened to you. You're getting about tired of it now. But all your old friends from Ultima 5 are there, right? And you gotta just pwn everything. And the cool thing about all the Ultima games is you can do just about anything in the world you want to. Like, if you get beamed into the throne room in the very beginning of the game, you can kill Lord British if you want to. And the game will be over for you, but you can do that. And, yeah, I mean, it's just a great game. It's got a lot of depth to it. The story and the world are really well developed, and I love it.
Now, is this one of those Ultima games where, like, your attributes are measured in terms of virtue, like honor?
Yeah, like, when you built your character, it's a really cool character creation process. You built your character... You're going along this path, right? And then you see a gypsy wagon. You go into the gypsy wagon, and she's got a bunch of, like, potions in front of you or something. She asks you all these questions, and she pours these different potions in the cup, and you got to drink it when you're done. So that was how you built your character. And I don't ever remember, like, any of that having an effect on your gameplay, but I think it did. I think it did, you know. But you could talk to everybody. And it was one of those games where you, like, had to type what you wanted to say. And you could talk to anybody, and it was just really cool to, like, you know, there was a whole lot of content that you just had to find, you know. You could pick up anything, you could use anything. It's very cool.
Now, I want to make the next Ultima game. Where they, I want to make Ultima, what is it, 12? Where the gypsy just hands you roofies, and instead of Lord British, it's Burger King. And that's the game.
That's the game. So my worst game, I think I've...
No,
worst...
no, what were your other two?
Well, my other two were just, you weren't listening.
Nice. Just assume Blake Buck is dumb.
So, I think the worst RPG I've ever seen, and I only saw a little bit of this and played a little bit, but it was Final Fantasy X-2. X-2. So, they took Final Fantasy X, they were like, alright, what new mechanic can we add to this game and make it fun? Because everybody's going to buy it. And that mechanic was dress up. You could dress your characters up in different clothes. That was it. That was what the whole game was about. Dressing up your characters. Lame.
Lame. All right, well, Blake Buck's now going to lay his, well, not top three, because a lot of heat's been said. So these are just going to be three solid games. First of all, The game I've been playing till my eyes come out, Oblivion. Oh my God. I played that game for like 60 hours in the past month. And that's a lot of game time for Blake Buck. But it's huge. It's open-ended. You know, you can... There are so many different quests. I've been playing a game 60 hours, so I didn't finish the main quest because I've been doing other stuff. But there's a lot to do, a lot to see. It's very, you know, like all you have different stats. You can do, essentially, it's a huge sense of freedom in that there's a huge world and there's tons of stuff to do in it. And it's really pretty non-linear. So,
does it have roofies in the Burger King?
Well, it certainly doesn't. But the thing that you often get into debates about in the game and in RPGs is it's like non-linear gameplay versus story-driven gameplay. You know, like, you look at, like, Morrowind was particularly bad at this. I didn't play Morrowind a lot because I didn't like it. That's Elder Scrolls 3, the game before Oblivion. And, like, there was no story. I didn't know what I was doing. Like, nothing really connected. It was like I was wandering around beating up monsters for no reason, you know. And you never, I mean, though you could do a lot, nothing really connected stuff together. Whereas you look at a game like, well, this would probably be my number two title, Knights of the Old Republic, where you've got, you know, very targeted gameplay and a story that really, you know, goes places. And, you know, even though you can't do as much, the story is a lot better. So it's a trade-off. But, yeah, Knights of the Old Republic, Oblivion, two solid titles. And, of course, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with you guys, The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time. Hello?
Now, I wouldn't call that a role-playing game.
Well... I don't know. Would you classify that as role-playing?
I think it was sort of a...
I think in most players' book, it's a role-playing game.
Yeah, but no, it's not. Yeah, but no, it's not. That was...
All right.
You think of... there's a whole genre that game spawned. I mean, if you look at even like Shadow of the Colossus can be classified in the kind of game... I mean, you know, all these run around and cut, but with a little story. I mean, I don't think Zelda is a role-playing game. It's not real story-heavy. It's mainly about, you know, the action. It was even in the early incarnation, it was almost level based. I mean, you had to go to the dungeon and, you know, you beat the boss true. Or whatever. So I wouldn't really classify that as a role.
Well, I'm retracting that if you're going to be mean, and I'm going to say Skies of Arcadia for the Dreamcast. Ooh. Is my number three. Excellent game. It came out on the GameCube later as like Skies of Arcadia 2004 Director's Cut Super Edition 2000. You might have noticed it had both 2004 and 2000 in the title.
Similar to our title having Crystal in it twice.
But Skies of Arcadia, you were not a space pirate. You were an air pirate, you know. You flew around, you did a little pirate stuff. Story was pretty engaging. Graphics were pretty good. Gameplay was good. It was all there, baby. I mean, it was all there. The total package.
See how that reinforcement works? See how that does that? Yeah, baby.
So my least favorite... online, or not online game, my least favorite role-playing of all time has to be EverQuest. EverQuest, it sucked away many hours of my life. That's a game you play, and then you just hate yourself after you play it. It's not, like in World of Warcraft, you might be like, well, I wasted a lot of time, but at least I got this cool character, and you know, I kind of feel good about what I've accomplished. In EverQuest, when you die, like when you got to the high levels, when you died, you could almost lose an entire level from dying once. It was ridiculous. So, I hate EverQuest. Ben Buck has like three level 60 characters in EverQuest, and consequently, he's also a cutter.
Now, is that his character in the game is a cutter?
I'll let you be the judge of that. All right, so last night, William Miller looks over at me, and he says, Blake Buck, you know what we need to do for research for this show tomorrow? We need to go buy Final Fantasy XII. Would you stop touching that? They can't see your face when you make that face. So last night, William Miller talks to me. He says, Blake, but we got to go buy Final Fantasy XII. So we got in the car, and that's what we did. We went to Walmart at 1 o'clock in the morning and bought Final Fantasy XII, and then we played through it. Now, we made the first mistake of trying to tape it. And when you try and tape, like, whenever you tape Blake Buck or William Miller doing anything, there is no patience. There is no logic. There's just us screaming at the screen. I think I was trying to make out with one of the male characters at one point. Because I thought she was a chick. But I played...
That's the problem with Final Fantasy games, though. And this is a trend that just needs to get reversed. It's just like, since Final Fantasy, you know, from 7 all the way up to 12, the main character has gotten more and more feminine. And yet, just they don't make the main character a woman.
What happened to, like, Edgar from Final Fantasy VI? Like, he was a womanizer, man. What happened to, like, role-playing
character? He was halfway to date rapist.
He was, like, a lady. Yeah, where did that character go?
Well, see, like, I think that Final Fantasy games have started more targeting to women.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I think that they've found that is a large demographic of their sales. And guys, you know, as long as there's still boobies in it, they don't care, right?
Boobies.
Dude, I was playing the game. There were some fox-looking ladies with boobies. And I was thinking, oh, God, I'm in Second Life all over again. But the game seemed fairly good. I played through a little bit. A little heavy on the cutscenes in the beginning, but that's to be expected. Finally get to play in the game. The progression system seems pretty intuitive, easy to figure out. And I've been having fun so far. So if I get a little further in the game, I'll let you guys know.
See, the cool thing about
Final Fantasy... So what happened to your vow to never again play a Japanese RPG?
We broke it. So the cool thing about Final Fantasy XII is that these guys came from the William Miller School of Game Design. They took a look at their battle system and said, what about this sucks? All right, well, menus suck, right? So they took all that heat out. So all of the characters except the main character are all automated by AI, right? And as you go through the game, you can collect these little AI units and wire them together to sort of script how your dudes fight. And you can manually override them, I think. But the battle system is really, like, innovative and cool.
And the settings seem pretty cool. I like the... I was a big fan of Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, and it's set in the same universe. So I'm now carting around in my micro Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. I'm telling people I got Final Fantasy XII Portable Edition.
Wait. Was Final Fantasy XII or Final Fantasy Tactics Advance was not set in the same universe as Final Fantasy Tactics?
Yeah, it was.
Was it Ivalice?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say that.
Oh,
I said it was set in the same universe as 12.
Oh.
But, wait. I don't believe
that. That's what I was agreeing to. What did you claim, Miller?
He's thinking the original Tactics and Tactics Advance are set in the same universe.
No, I didn't.
That's what you just said, you piece of shit. I got it on tape, motherfucker.
No, to clarify, I said I don't think the Final Fantasy Advance or Final Fantasy Tactics Advance universe is the same as Final Fantasy XII.
Yeah, it is.
No.
It is.
Yeah, it is, babe. Look, got the lizard men. They got the hot fox ladies.
Okay, I see. All right.
Dude.
I'm just wondering, what am I going to do? How am I going to save that edit? It was just like 3 minutes of garbage just then. So now, guys, I want to talk about what's your most, like, what did you say this we were going to do, William?
So Justin Fick suggested that we come up with, or that we recall an anecdote from our childhood, Fick, you can word it better.
All right, so this is like your personal defining RPG moment. Like, I don't know, just like the way I word it is your favorite memory growing up about playing RPGs with friends that, if aired, will prevent any of us from getting laid ever again.
All right, so you go first, Justin Fick.
I'd have to say that the original Final Fantasy was, Curtis Fick, come over here.
Yo!
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, you've interrupted the best damn podcast ever. What do you think about that?
I think that's fantastic. But I do apologize.
Curtis Fick, what is your favorite game go?
Probably some God of War.
God of War. Why God of War?
Because Justin Fick got me hooked.
I got him hooked on God of War.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have no idea
All right,
where I'm going with
this. Going good.
Man, a few words.
All right, get him the hell out of here. Let's go.
All right. All right, so anyway.
Here's a game moment go.
The personal defining RPG moment. Growing up, I used to live in Redmond back when Nintendo Hintline was a local call. A couple of us picked up the original Final Fantasy. And for such a low-key, you know, it's pretty dull game, the three of us were just completely batshit insane over everything that happened in this game. So, like, there were heated discussions over what to name the four characters. Because you can only have four letters per name. So we had to think of something really clever. I remember, because that game is a little harder, the dungeons were longer, a little harder, and after every one of the four fiends that was defeated in battle by the three of us, We basically threw a big party. Like, this is how pathetic we were as children. But, yeah, I remember being so, like we were so excited at the second fiend, Carrie, when we killed her. My friend Nathan was so excited that he got up and mooned the television. as celebratory dance. And when he finally beat the game, it was over his house. We got the phone call, and it was probably the most frenzied, frantic, worried rush over to his house to see the ending before it stopped. Like that's how hooked on this game we were.
Oh man!
And it all went downhill from there, and that's why I don't have a girlfriend right now.
All right, that was pretty good heat. Wayne Miller, what do you got?
All right, I was trying real hard to think of a RPG related one, but I couldn't. But I have a sort of adventure game related one that's just as good. So William Miller liked Zelda a whole lot back in the day.
Uh oh.
All right.
Uh oh. All right. I think I might remember this story.
So, I guess I was 20. when this happened. And, you know, Halloween's rolling around. So, I phoned up Grandma Miller, and actually Grandma Raimi, and said, "Grandma Raimi, I need a Link costume for Halloween." And so, so I got one. And 20, that's what I wore.
Now, I have to say, as much as I do like video games, I have never been a video game character for Halloween.
When I was a real young lad, like maybe 8 years old, I went as a lemming to Halloween back in the day. Which, I gotta say, that's respectable. All right.
I saw two lemmings at the SCAD costume ball. One had like a pick, and the other one had a shovel, and they were all dressed up. It was pretty funny.
And the third was strapped with a bomb.
The nuke lemming.
We like that one.
So, all right, so now it's time for my defining moment. Now, this actually isn't my defining moment. This comes from a buddy of mine. He told me the other day.
This is our buddy Craig from high school.
He was telling, you know, like, I was playing through Zelda, and, like, the whole time I was playing that game. You remember, like, in Zelda Ocarina of Time on the N64? Like, there was a Princess Zelda, and then she gets kidnapped, and you get to, you know, you correspond with this, you know, mysterious ninja guy named Sheik, right? And Craig always told me he always felt bad when he went up to Sheik because he thought he was hot. Yeah, he thought Sheik was hot. And then later he found out a girl, so that was okay. He's not gay anymore.
That's probably the biggest relief in the world for him.
Oh, she's a girl. Okay, okay.
Thank God. So I can start masturbating to it again.
What have you done with our sexuality, Nintendo? You've warped our minds.
I blame the androgynous characters in Final Fantasy.
All right, so I think that about does it for our discussion on RPGs. Anything else you want to add?
If you guys have any feedback on RPGs, just send us an email at feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com or call our listener at 588-45-BATTLE-9. All in one breath. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
All right, guys, on this week's show, we've got a special interview with a special guest. You might have remembered him from a few episodes back. Your name is Wazoo, right?
My name is Wazoo, but my real name is Damon.
Now, Wazoo is a bit of a meme on the Best Damn Podcast Ever. A while back, I promised Wazoo to be on the show. I was in a drunk stupor at the time.
All right, so Wazoo, what's your name? What do you do? Where are you from? Tell us your story.
Oh, great. My life story. Well, I live suspiciously close to William Miller in Massachusetts.
Well, I don't live in Massachusetts anymore, but if I did, there'd be problems.
Oh. Yeah, me. That would be the problem. All right. Anyway, I do a podcast for a small, dorky, Lost-related... Oh, you know, I can't say this. Someone's going to listen to this. I'm going to get my job fired. But I do a podcast for a small Lost Theories show. It's fun.
Now, a Lost Theories show. Describe that for me.
Well, a bunch of people who think they know what's going on in the show Lost, which everybody loves, write down some stuff, I read it on the air, and I get my face out into the internet.
So what are some of the hot theories that are going around right now on the Lost websites?
I can't believe you're actually pretending to be interested in this. Let me pull some up.
Actually, I follow Lost, so enlighten me on your theories.
Well, first of all, Justin, all right. Give us a rundown of what Lost is. Because William Miller and Blake Bug don't watch TV.
All right, Lost is basically plane crash becomes monster movie becomes psychological experiment becomes I don't know what the f***.
All right, I got it. They're dead.
There we go. You know,
either that, or it's going to be the Super Mario Brothers 2 ending where it's all just one dude's dream, and then I'm going to kill myself.
All right, so it's all taking place in the polar bear's mind. All over the internet right now.
Well, my favorite is that it's all taking place in the polar bear's mind. But let's see some of the big ones. Logging in.
So while we're waiting, Wazoo, how does it feel to be in the presence of such experienced podcasters?
It feels amazing. It feels amazing. I'm getting all sweaty over here. Ah!
do you do the podcast by yourself, or do you have other hosts that you have to put up with? Or
I do have other hosts that I have to put up with who I constantly ridicule.
Oh, good. Good.
Some people are saying, like, the best one is that the black smoke is nanobots, which no matter how many times the producers say, nah, not really. And oh yeah,
monster,
the black smoke.
That big monster made out of smoke that ate
yeah.
Right?
It's a smoke monster.
Yeah! Yeah! It's Fox Die.
Yeah. Dude.
I win.
I'm gonna say, dude. Yes, you win. You got all the codes. Alright, you know, these are all too long, man. These are just stupid.
And well, what's your personal theory, Wazoo? What's gonna happen on next season of Lost?
My theory is that everybody's gonna die in the next 5 seasons, and you're just gonna be a picture of a tree. But,
I'm telling you, they're already dead, baby.
Oh, yeah. And they're re-dying. And they're going to Uber Heaven.
You gotta stop saying that.
No.
Yes, dude.
We play Gears of War Coltrane.
I was gonna say, is that like, it sounded like y'all turned into Terry Tate in the
that's
course
right,
of a week.
That's right.
Yeah, baby! Paytrain's coming, baby! So, Wazoo, I've got a question for you. Let's say you're doing a podcast, right, and another podcast started making fun of you, and then your co-host also started making fun of you, and then didn't let you be the host of the show anymore. Would you continue to podcast, or would you just give up?
I think I would. And I think you're referring to Mr. M. Buzzer X.
What? I didn't say anything.
Yes, Mr. That's correct.
No one in particular.
Yeah, no one in particular. Oh, all right. This is how dumb our site is. There's an entire section of the site devoted to theories about the dog in the show, just in case.
The dog is Fox Die.
Callback joke for Blake Buck. Oh, I don't have one yet. Damn it.
You know what, if we're wrapping this up already, I just gotta add something. You know there's a game that's just called D?
I thought it was like Vampire Hunter D.
Yeah, there's Vampire Hunter D. We reported on Mr. D Goes to Town last week. What is D?
I'll tell you what D is. D is this game you play when you go to the Ole Miss football game.
Come on, Rebel D!
If you shout D loud enough, the team does better. That's,
Only on defense.
Only on defense, though, yeah. Don't want to shout D on the offense. That's bad.
That's like crossing streams.
Yeah, it's like crossing streams. It doesn't work.
Here's the plot. A little girl named D. Yeah, main character's name is D. Is contacted by the LA police receiving a message.
Little girl named M.
That joke fell flat on its face, Mark.
No, D. If you have a character in a game called D, it can't be a little girl. It needs to be like this big 400-pound dude looks like Mike Hagar from Final Fight that just bites babies' heads off. That's D.
This is just a game where there's a bunch of computers and you walk around and you get messages, you find something out, and you're this little girl named D, and there's a cannibal who tries to kill you.
The first part of that sounded like Marathon.
Oh, Christ.
Well, that's it. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to add?
Plug your site and your podcast.
I think I'm going to plug my stump as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm ready then.
All right.
First of all, Weemo, right. Stop touching that cord. Weemo is taking the main audio cord that has all of our dialogue and is like twisting it and trying to pull it out.
All right, here's my stump. It's called Nord and Birch Couldn't Make Head or Tail of It.
Are you sure that's not one of the books you're reading in class?
Aegis. No, we're reading Shakespeare right now.
Okay.
Smile, grin, grin. All right, Nord and Birch couldn't make head or tail of it.
Is it the sequel to Nord and Birch Don't Know What the F***?
All right. I think this is a find the hot spot adventure game. And it's the only game that came with beer goggles.
Nord and Birch couldn't make head or tail of it. It's a PC Commodore 64 game. It's pretty much all about wordplay. Like, in one level, there'll be a bunch of anagrams that try to creep up on you, and you have to type them into a different anagram so, like, they die. The main characters are two farmers named Nord and Birch. Yeah, old Compy 64 game.
Well, that sounds
awful. Sounds like Typing of the Dead. You guys ever play Typing of the Dead?
Typing of the Dead was, like, the game when I was in, like, third grade.
Dude, I'm gonna break
just be like, just be like, type.
We're gonna do a video Typing of the Dead review.
I'll beat you Typing of the Dead.
Alright, well, thanks so much, Wazoo, for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
Alright, we'll talk to you later. Thanks for listening.
That was great. It sounded like if Mike had any sort of personality or talent, that's what he'd sound like.
Yeah, like, he was witty. And actually alive. And it had Tunter Dennis's sick child in the background.
Ooh, I feel that burn. Oh, I feel that.
So next is feedback.
All right, guys, this week in the feedback, we got an email from Jared N. Now, Jared N, I do believe, is he introduces himself as the other guy from the IMG podcast.
Jared N, don't feel bad. I'm the other guy on this show.
He just wanted to say that he absolutely loved the ending of BDPE Episode 9. The M Buzzer X bashing is an art around here. Unfortunately, M Buzzer X does our editing, so most of the Stefan insults get cut out. Sounds like... Even on his own show, it's not too popular.
So we got one from Mark S. Holy Mark S.
Mark, we have so many Marks. Again, if your name starts with an M, please send us your favorite video game character so we can differentiate you guys. We have at least 5 or 6 Marks and Mikes who write into the show.
That's right. Justin Fick, what was that?
that was Curtis Fick watching, I believe it's the Cowboys and the Giants game.
Nice.
Football.
All right. So Mark S. wrote us just an incredibly long email. You know that we're not going to read all of this. So I'm going to read the first line and then we're going to move on. It says, "Well, I'm a Mac gamer. I actually want the Xbox 360. I think it's an awesome system. I also think Redline sucks. Gargles, swishes, it all around, and swallows." Okay, that's it. He wrote us this hella long
huge email. Alright, so our next email... Oh, Justin Fick, you take this last one.
Alright, let me scroll down all the way past this, Oh, I mean, come on, I love Justin's Kill Monty, blam. Mark S., thank you. The only other part of that I'm gonna read. Alright, anyway, Tom Barbalay.
Easy to say, Barbalay.
Tom Barbalay.
Easy to say, Barbalay.
Get that sound bite.
I'll play it right there.
Greetings, BDPE crew. It is a pleasure to listen to you folk refine your craft. Sadly, it seems my cornpone wisdom will never reach the masses. What is cornpone?
That must be some sort of Jewish epitaph. I tried. Look, what are you doing over there for?
So Tom Barbalay continues, "I'm not sure the kind of Vegas apartment complexes Justin Fick cruises. I tried the Guitar Hero experiment. I'm also a transitory vegan, but could only hear the sounds of children being beaten.
That would have been fun for you. He would have joined in. He would have been player two on that game.
I'm here to rock. On the topic of contributing to the delinquency of a minor, Cliffy B. has never had an original thought in his life. William Miller's insight into Gears of War being a direct ripoff of early Warhammer 40K is quite correct, not to mention the body armor on the crustacean critters being fought. I guess it is hard to be as original as chocolate and peanut butter. Next, I'll be thinking of putting them together in some kind of cup. Somewhat ironically, I had an extended correspondence with GW's chief legal counsel on the chemistry of lead rot about a year ago. A very cordial fellow, but unfortunately, I don't think GW will chase after Epic with chainsaw guns blazing.
What is GW? Oh, Game Workshop. Yeah. Damn, I'm smart.
Good.
My question to you all is, has Cliffy B. replaced my friend John Romero as the most hated man in game development?
Ooh, I don't know.
Ooh.
I don't... No, there's no way.
No.
The only person who can place John Romero is Blake Buck, all right?
Blake Buck is going to make you his...
No, it's going to be Blake Buck is going to make you his John Romero. That would be the ultimate. All right. What is this here at the end? What's this P.S.?
It says P.S., if William Miller reads this email, please make sure he does so slowly. Roughly one in four words from the Cornpone email was completely misread. If necessary, I can provide an MP3 of me reading my own email to assist with my disjointed sentences and multisyllabic prose. That's bang prose for Justin Fick.
In response to that, yes, you should send in an audio file of your entire email.
And yes, I cannot read.
All right. Now it's time for the stump. Let me think if I got stump. William, you got stump?
I have no
stump. I got crunk stumps.
All right, lay your stump on me and I'll think of one.
All right. Well, my main stump is, you guys might get this, but maybe not. It's called Bahamut Lagoon.
That's a dragon thing in Final Fantasy.
The fire one.
No, it's a dragon.
That's Leviathan you're thinking
of. No, that's a water one. Dude, Leviathan's water, baby.
I know.
You missed the slap.
I got it. It's reminding me.
All right, Bahamut is a dragon. Comes to the sky, shoots out lightning. So, Bahamut's quest, what'd you say?
It's called Bahamut Lagoon.
Bahamut Lagoon. All right, clearly he's underwater. And that's his house. Problem is... Problem is that there are all these condos that they're trying to build on the water. He's like, hey, baby. Oh, shit. He's like, hey, man. why are you trying to raise my property value when I'm just trying to be over here electrifying some water?
That's it.
That's it. That's
close. It's sort of like an episode of MTV Cribs where he shows you the lagoon in his backyard by the pool. He has a built-in wet bar in there. You can just swim up to it. No, actually, Bahamut Lagoon is it's from Square. It came out around this, like a little after Final Fantasy VI, and uses a lot of the same graphics, or graphical style, that kind of thing. And it's actually a turn-based strategy game, and it's a lot like. You know, kind of like Advance Wars or Fire Emblem, something like that. You actually get about 12 parties of, or not 12, but a bunch of different parties of characters of four characters each that you can move around, and you know, each one of them gets like one of the dragons to, you know, sort of like their little group dragon, and basically, battle is, you know, turn-based. You get to move your guys and move your dragons, and it's very turn-based. And the battling is all it's all enacted for you. You don't get to control anything.
Right. It's like Tactics Ogre,
or Ogre, yeah, exactly. Ogre Tactics, that's the one I was thinking of.
Oh yeah.
See, well, I play games.
No. You know what game is awesome in that series that nobody's ever played? Ogre Battle 64 is an awesome game. And if I still had a 64 that wasn't, you know, in the closet, buried under shoes, I would play that game right now.
I've played the Ogre Battle. I really enjoyed the one.
I've only played the original Ogre Battle.
Ogre Battle 64, but, you have like an army of like 200 dudes at all times.
Nice.
It was wild. It was really hard to learn how to play, and then once you did, you were set. But it took you... I mean, I took that instruction book to class every day. Had to review it fifth period.
So, but yeah, this Bahamut Lagoon was actually never released in the U.S. You have to get it as a ROM with a translation patch if you want to play this. Hmm. And it's for Super Nintendo.
All right, my stump for you guys. This is not, it's a fairly well-known game, fairly recent. I'm going to hope you guys know it. It's called Rocket Robot on Wheels.
Rocket Robot on Wheels. It sounds like a sex toy.
All right, so you're a rocket. Yeah, that's as far as I go.
Well, I would also infer that you're a robotic rocket. That's as far as I got.
Rocket Robot on Wheels was a Nintendo 64 game that had a red cart. That's the best way you can pick it out in a stack.
You mean a red tape?
It had a red tape, exactly. So Rocket on Robot on Wheels was made by a company called Sucker Punch, which now makes Sly Cooper, Sly 2, and Sly 3. And Rocket Robot on Wheels was it was sort of a Mario knockoff, but it was a really good Mario knockoff. You know, it had like a bunch of different levels. You were a little robot guy, and you had to go around to all these like kind of circus theme park leveled theme park themed levels. And it was cool because it had a really, for N64 times, it had a really advanced physics engine. Like, you could drive around in these, like, cars, like a little hot dog car around the beach and stuff, and, like, the physics were really spot-on accurate. And there were all these mini-games where you, like, toss, like, objects into containers and stuff and had to get them in the right containers. It was a pretty cool game. So, thumbs up, Rocket Robot on Wheels. Check it out if you got a 64. I'm sure it's, like, $2 now.
Look for the red tape.
Red tape, that's how you find it. But there's also like a wrestling game with the red tape. That's not it. All right, William Miller, what's your stump go?
I don't have a stump, Blake Buck.
Dude, you gotta do one, baby.
All right. I'm trying to think of like a calculator game at one point, because I know Blake Buck never used a calculator.
No boars. Oh. Oh, look, you want me to give you one?
Go, give me one.
All right, let
me
think.
Dude, I hadn't played that game.
Dude, you played that game. Shut up. You didn't play that game?
No, I didn't. All right. Justin Fick, you ready?
Go.
I played this game. It's called Space Station Silicon Valley.
Space Station Silicon Valley.
Is that right, Blake Buck?
That's right. Okay.
All right. So obviously, Silicon Valley, you are a plastic surgeon in space. And all the aliens from Star Trek are coming on for breast implants. And it's kind of like Trauma Center mixed in with Dance Dance Revolution.
And Cooking Mama.
Space Station Silicon Valley was a game published for the 64 again, developed by the DMA Design, the same guys who did Grand Theft Auto nowadays. And they also did Lemmings, but DMA Design, and they did, you went on a space station and you were a computer chip. And inside of the space station were lots of robots. And as a computer chip, you could go around and possess the different robots, and they all had different powers and stuff. Like, if you were a dog, you could bite. But then there was, like, a rocket dog that had, like, rocket packs on him. He could go real fast, and you could get up to, like, new levels and stuff. So it was, like, a puzzle action-adventure game, and it was pretty cool. And it was really weird, because it was from Scotland. Those guys are crazy. So that was William Stump.
That was mine, yeah.
All right. Well, that's us for this week in the best damn podcast ever. What do you guys think about that, baby?
I think we need...
Blake Buck needs to get slapped.
He's been slapped enough. I think we need to send a special thanks to our Wiki Fairy.
That's right, there. The Wiki Fairy.
Wiki Fairy.
Who is Wiki Fairy?
We don't know, and the I don't mystery. Think we want to know. We don't want to know. It's the silent servant of the best damn podcast ever. We thank you, Wiki Fairy.
We'd like to thank the New York Giants and the Dallas Cowboys for providing such background drama,
and Wazoo for coming on the show today.
Oh yes, Wazoo, excellent.
Very special interview there. He's much wittier than I anticipated. He pwned me.
If you'd like to send us any feedback, it's feedback at Best Damn Podcast. Feedback at internet. Feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com, or you can call our listener line at 845-BATTLE-9. It's like a poem coming out of my mouth. A poem of feedback.
It's that multisyllabic prose that Bobalay is talking about.
Bobalay, that's right. So, from all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm William Miller.
I'm Justin Fick.
We'll see you next time. Comedy.
Go next!
I like how you said golden axe. I just said the word comedy.